I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Tomorrow and Friday at the Vancouver International Film Festival screens a fascinating, important documentary, Give Up Tomorrow. It's about a young man in the Philippines, Paco Larrañaga, half Spanish, half Filipino, who's sent to death row for a crime he didn't commit. Two sisters in Cebu, an island nearly 600 kilometers from Manila, Marijoy Chong and Jacqueline Chong, disappear in 1997. At the time of their alleged disappearance, rape, and murder, Larrañaga was elsewhere, which some 35 witnesses have testified to. Over the years, I've indulged my interest in the Philippines by talking about its politics, history, and its culture with various guests. With my guest now, the film's producer, Marty Sahuko, will talk about this case, what happened, how the country dealt with capital punishment, how corruption and the media twist things beyond recognition. I'll ask Mr. Sahuko about the politics involved, the lives lost, and the incarceration which continues to this day, albeit in Spain. It's an interesting journey. Mr. Sahuko's brother is married to Mr. Larrañaga's sister, but beyond that, this film is a fair, sobering account of Larrañaga's fight for justice. The movie screens tomorrow night, Friday afternoon, and there's an additional screening next Thursday morning. Check out VIFF.org for more information. The website for more is at pacodocu.com. It's already won awards at the Tribeca Film Festival. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Marty Sahuko. Good morning, Mr. Sahuko.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. So I understand that you quit your job to make this movie, is that correct?
Yes. Boy, it was a long time ago because this film has taken 7 years to make. But yes, I was living in New York, and this opportunity to make this documentary fell on my lap. And at that point, I was looking to do something that I could get passionate about, something that I found meaningful. So I did. I quit my job. I together with my filmmaking partner, we bought a camera and we flew to the Philippines for our first shoot.
Now, at the time that you said it's taken 7 years, how long had Mimi been married to your brother?
I think Mimi had been married, when this first happened to them, in 1997, when Paco was, first arrested, I think they had been married maybe 5 years.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's go back to 1997, the Chong sisters, Mary Jo and Jacqueline. What happened there?
The story, started when the girls went missing. It was a rainy night on July 16, and the girls were apparently waiting at the Ayala Mall in Cebu, and that was the last time they were seen.
So July 16th. For people that don't know the Philippines, Cebu is, in the south of the country.
Yes.
Right? And so on July 16th, that's where the Chong sisters were in front of this mall. Where was Paco?
Paco at the time was in Manila, which is a separate island, about 350 miles away. And he was in cooking school. He actually was taking his culinary exams on July 16th. And, there was no way he could have been in Cebu at that same time.
But had he had a sort of criminal past, I guess, before all this?
I wouldn't say criminal. He wasn't, there were no charges against him. I mean, he had a bad reputation. He was this big guy. You know, he was 19 years old. He was a bit of a bully. He would get into fights. So nothing criminal. There had never been any charges against him. But he was an easy target.
And after he was arrested, there was a lot of talk in the press that he was a part of this prominent political clan in the Philippines, that they were wealthy. Or are the Larrañagas wealthy?
Well, Paco's mom is an Osmeña, and the Osmeña family is a political clan in the Philippines. But just like any big family, I mean, there are the wealthy ones, there are the political ones, and then there are some that are just kind of like middle class, ordinary citizens, and Paco's mom is one of those. Like she married a Spanish pelota player, and they inherited a farm, and they run the farm, and very, very simple folks. So by no means would I consider them part of the affluent or wealthy class in the Philippines.
But that idea that they were powerful and wealthy, that was overplayed in the press, right?
Exactly. Yeah, the media really, really manipulated this story. You know, I mean, it was an election year at the time, and there was an Osmeña running against Joseph Estrada. So it ended up becoming a smear campaign on the Osmeñas.
About the sort of what the chattering classes thought at the time about the media coverage. You interview in the movie Wendy Monsot, who's actually been on this program, who I enjoy reading and watching. Well, what did she think initially, that he was guilty?
Yes. I mean, that was the public perception from the very beginning. You know, the media, I mean, this is a very high-profile case. You know, at that time in 1997, that was, I guess, about almost 14, 15 years ago, you know, Cebu was still relatively a small town. And this crime really shook the island up. And so when they finally picked up the suspects, you know, the public kind of really wanted blood. They wanted someone to pay for this crime. So everybody thought that, you know, they got the right people, the right group, you know, especially the way the media presents it to the public.
And I guess people like Mrs. Monsot, they've since changed their mind, right? I mean,
yes. I mean, you know, any journalist or someone from the media who started asking, you know, the right questions, who started to probe a little bit, who started to do research and do a little bit of investigation, which is really the role of the media, you know, they would have seen that there was no way Paco could have been in Cebu. I mean, he had 42 witnesses that placed him in Manila. He had his exam papers. He had photographs. There was like a logbook, you know, a department that he was living in. It was impossible for him to be in Cebu. And yet, in spite of this overwhelming evidence that placed him in Manila, he was still convicted.
What about someone like Teddy Loxin, who whose program you feature in the documentary? He has some rather damning things to say about the suspects. Has he changed his mind?
I'm not sure if he's changed his mind. When you see the film, you'll see the different roles that media plays in the film. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there's Wendy Monsot, who kind of did some responsible research and investigation. And then on the other hand, you have Teddy Loxin, who kind of just played on the sensational aspects of this case and really, really, you know, was responsible for the trial by publicity that Paco suffered. During his trial, the media, there was a program in the Philippines that reenacted the crime, and they had famous people playing the roles of Paco and the other co-accused, and they depicted the boys kidnapping, raping, and murdering the girls, and this was all televised on national television while the trial was happening before Paco's defense took the stand.
And you mentioned that it was an election year in the Philippines, and politics does play a prominent role in this film. Was Paco's incarceration, the accusations, I mean, watching the movie, one assumes that it was just all political, was it?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question. it was partly political, Joe. Like, I think it also, the ethnic and social class really also played a part of it. Like, you know, Paco's father is Spanish, so Paco's mestizo. You know, and then the Chong sisters that went missing are Chinese Filipino. So there was the whole, you know, mestizo versus Chinese tension, and then also the class. Like, as you said earlier, Paco was perceived to be, wealthy and part of the Osmeña clan and well-connected. But if you see the film, you'll realize that it turns out that it was really the Chongs that had all the connections to Malacañang, to the president, and also to the Supreme Court.
In the movie, you interview the Chongs, the mother, Mrs. Chong. The father, did he refuse to be interviewed?
Yes. Mr. Chong preferred to be out of camera. He was always there, you know, usually next to his wife, but he didn't want to be part of the interviews. It was really Mrs. Chong who was the public figure.
And she seems just like a very colorful a piece of work. I mean, does that accurately describe her?
To say the least, yes. When you see the film, you'll see that, Mrs. Chong is quite complicated, actually. I mean, you know, she really is the first victim in this story. Like, she lost two girls, you know. I mean, she is a grieving mother, but you'll see the, you know, the extent that she goes through to make sure that these boys get convicted in spite of all the overwhelming evidence that they were innocent and that they couldn't do it. You know, I'm not really sure what her motivations were, it's obvious. You know, we know that she knows that these boys didn't do it because of all the lies that she would put out there. I mean, she would always say that Paco went to school with her daughters, and Paco went to an all-boys school. You know, we went to that school. We interviewed the principal. You know, there was no way that Paco went to school, you know, with the girls.
And so, thinking about whatever her motivation is, you reveal in the movie that her husband had some connection to, I guess, a drug lord?
Yes, that's what came out in the media. I mean, you know, I mean, we have to be careful there because, you know, in the film, we were not able to really solve the crime. We don't know what happened to the sisters. But what came out in the media initially before they picked up Paco and the others was that, you know, they were pointing to Mr. Chong's relationship with his employer, who was an alleged drug lord at the time.
And the when they find the two bodies, did they say for certain that they were the Chong sisters?
No, you know, that's another that comes out in the film as well. Initially, the brother of the sisters went to identify the body, and he said, "That's not my sisters. That's neither of my sisters."
Yeah.
The body was about 4 inches shorter than the girls, and then also the hair was different. But then a few days later, the story changed, and the family came out saying that was one of the girls. And then apparently they identified the body through fingerprints that were slit off the fingers, and so we really don't know where those fingerprints came from.
You mentioned the race aspect of it, which I find interesting. Larrañaga's race is mestizo, as you said, and the Chongs were Chinese. We've talked about politics already. We've touched on politics, I should say. You know, as you said, it's about 13, 14, 15, nearly 15 years ago now since all this began. Have things in the Philippines changed that much with regards to some of these issues that we've talked about already?
You know, I've been living in New York for about 12 years, so I'm not so familiar anymore, but I feel that, you know, the corruption is quite ingrained in our systems. It's so endemic and to the point where we just accept it. We just say, "Oh, the Philippines, yeah, we suffer from graft and corruption, and that's the way it is." And you know, nobody's really doing anything about it. I mean, the new administration ran on a platform of human rights, but I don't think that's improved at all. And so my motivation for making this film, for telling the story, is really, you know, to call attention. I mean, we tell the story of one case, but there are thousands of Pacos out there in the Philippines, and it's common practice for the police to frame people, you know. I mean, they often they don't have the proper training or the adequate resources to conduct investigations, and so it's common practice to just to pin the crime on people and to frame people for murder or for heinous crimes.
This is such a compelling story, and the movie does a great job in telling it. So he's sentenced to either he's found guilty, Paco is, of and found guilty and committed to life in prison. The Supreme Court reviews the case. Again, you go into the politics of that, and he's now sentenced to death. In the meantime, the country gets rid of capital punishment. International agencies get involved, you know, the United Nations and the sort, and he's sent to Spain, right?
Exactly.
And that's where he is today.
Paco's in Spain today, yes.
Yeah. Is there any hope that he'll get out?
Well, you know, we premiered the film about 5 months ago at the Tribeca Film Festival, and afterwards we played at a festival in Washington, D.C., and in both places, people from the Spanish embassy came to see the film, and they were totally shocked. I mean, nobody really realized all the injustices that took place and that continues to take place against Paco. Until you see the film, you won't realize the extent of it. And since then, we've heard that that things are happening behind the scenes in Spain. We're hoping that the film is working. We're bringing it to Spain in a few weeks, actually. Our big Spanish premiere will be at the Valladolid Film Festival on October 23. And Paco's family is coming to Spain for that. So I think hopefully, when we bring the film to Spain, that's where it can make a difference in Paco's case.
Has he seen the movie?
Yes, we shared the film with Paco when we went to Spain in July. And, his reaction was like, finally, my real story has come out. Because in the Philippines, as you'll see in the film, like, media just twisted and manipulated everything. And the public perception was that this guy is a villain, is a bad guy. And even on his own trial, Paco was not allowed to testify. The judge refused for him to take the witness stand, which is actually a major violation of one's constitutional right. So his story has never been told. And when he saw the film, he finally said, finally, the true story is out there.
Marty, it's a great movie. Congratulations on it.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. I'm so excited to bring it here to Vancouver. I grew up here.
Right.
I lived here for many years before moving back to the Philippines and New York. So Vancouver is so meaningful to me, and to be part of the Vancouver International Film Festival is such an honor.
Good luck with the rest of the movie.
Thank you, Joe, and I invite all your listeners to come out and see it. We have three screenings over the next week.
Indeed. It's tomorrow night, Friday afternoon, and next Thursday morning. Check out VIFF.org for more information. The website for the movie is pacodocu.com. The film's producer, Marty Suhuko, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.